I think first I would have to echo about everything that's been said up to now, particularly some of the things that Carlton Lord said. I remember quite well his Mystery DX contest as one of the most enjoyable things that ever happened during my DX years. And one of the little tricks he played on us was to run, to include WLW in that list of stations using their experimental call, W8XO, during that period. And you had to listen to the station in order to catch that. Otherwise, you would pass it by and not know that it was included in that contest, which I did. Needless to say, I was not one of the winners. But it was great fun, and I always enjoyed Great X Magazine. It was really the instrument by which I became interested in the hobby as much as I have been. Now, I know my question has been what I remember about the early days, but I cannot come here without first saying a few other words. First, I think it's been 15 years. How long has it been since Kellerman took over?
13 years.
13 years, all right. When I turned it over to Kellerman, I sort of forgot about DXing, except to read the bulletin, keep up with the changes. For example, I know WPXY has applied for a call letter change, and I know generally what's going on. My own tuning, I tuned the HQ180 on one day after it sat there for a couple of years, and it was working pretty good. I thought, well, I'll get this thing going, and it started to play okay. And all of a sudden, boom, dead silence. And I thought, I fiddled around with it, you know. I thought, oh, that thing is done. So then I decided, well, before I throw it out the garbage heap, I'll give it one more shot. Turned it on a couple of weeks ago, and hey, man, it's got new life. Laying away, way good again. So, you know, who knows? You might hear from me. I might make a comeback. But I want to come saying thanks for accepting me in and making me feel good again. I feel I'm back among friends. I don't know your names. I don't know your faces exactly, but you're the same people that I used to know because you talk the same language. You're interested in the same things and you have the same spirit. Different names. First, one of the first people I met was Dave Schmidt, and I came through the door. He said, "I'm Schmidt." I said, "Oh, Frank." And then I realized, hey, Frank Schmidt's got to be about 80 years old. This cat ain't that old. And then he said, "Dave." Oh, yeah, Dave. And he's been to my house, you know. But see, that's what happens of an old guy. But the nice part about it is you seem to understand that and you make an allowance for a guy like me. Now that makes me feel real good. So thank you for that. Now the other thing I want to take time to say is something about the purpose of a radio club, and that may have escaped some of you. The original intentions of a radio club were to provide a means of exchanging information that would be helpful to all the members. And Carlton said, the Newark Evening News used to publish it back in those early days, and call them every evening, I think, wasn't it, Carlton?
Wednesday night,
all right. That's it. The radio club sprang out of that. And ours included. And the purpose was to provide information that would be helpful to all the members. And I think that's what we do to this very day. And I hope that you'll always keep that in mind. Now, most of the members have been very helpful in this regard, but there is that occasional guy that takes and never gives anything back. We've had a few of those kind. And I hear you cussing those guys out. Sometimes you call them dirty names without maybe sometimes realizing what those fellows are guilty of. It's merely that they take more than they give. That's their sin. And so they do not have honor in their old days. And that's why I feel good right now, knowing that I have done my little share. I've tried to give back as much as I have been given. And I repeat it now for your benefit, knowing that that's the way it should be. So hear those words. To the publisher, I don't know what the status is right now. I think I read something there where it's about to enter the stages of transition again. And if that's so, well, is that right, Dick? Next year, maybe? All right. Well, I got the assistant publisher with me here. We had it as a family project, running the whole darn club for a couple of years. All the functions thereof. So I know how much work it is, and I know what a thankless task it is most of the time. But also a rewarding one, in that you make many friends and have many interesting experiences along the way. And if I were, you know, young again, I would do it all over. I never regret a minute of the time that I gave to supporting this organization. It has been well worth it to me. One word of advice. The publisher should never take any crap from the membership. It's okay to hear their complaints and then turn your back on it and forget about them. If they give you too much crap, there's one little weapon I used once on one guy that I thought was being a bad boy, and I needed to punish him a little bit. And I just simply mailed his bulletin late 2 weeks, 3 weeks in a row. I never said it before to anybody. I told somebody last night, I forgot who I told. Don't matter now. You can't convict me now. Statute of limitations has run out on me. But I just pass it along as a suggestion to whoever the next publisher is. You can use some ideas like that. Keep things under control. And make them think they're running things. Everybody be happy. Now, that's important to me about the club. It amazes me that you have the same interest now that we had in the old days. In fact, you're as enthusiastic as we ever were, I believe. And you certainly can't have the same opportunities we had for, well, the hobby is entirely different, as Ernie said, and Pete. Carlton referred to those 100 waters on the West Coast. I have some of them. I have some of the ones they referred to. My pride and joy. And now I remember the placard in Ray Edge's den that said, "Them that can brag without lying, let them brag." It's a letter from KTOH, Hilo, Hawaii. I got her. It was easy back in those days. And KXO, Pete mentioned, I got that one. And KRKO, some of those. It wasn't nothing to it. Fish cake. It was fun, though. And I'll have to tell you some more of the things that I remember from that period. The first report that went out of the country was to TGW in Guatemala. I couldn't write a report very well then. Incidentally, that's some of the things that I learned out of the hobby. I learned how to spell, how to compose a letter, how to punctuate, how to You know, I learned some history, I learned geography, I learned a lot of things. And that particular report to TGW, I had to get my wife to help me write that report. We were both in our bare feet back in those days. And when we got the answer back, they also sent along a pound of Guatemalan coffee. So, well, you know, we got a care package way back in the 30s. And I think the rats got that coffee, though, or something happened to it, disappeared. Anyway, those are some of the things that I remember. Carlton Lord's Mystery DX contest, I referred to before, was one of the highlights of my listening period. Some of the other programs that you used to hear in the old days, you recall the DX programs, many of them were sponsored by Chamber of Commerce type appeals. They wanted mail, they wanted to hear from their listeners, they wanted to promote their local communities, and you usually would receive some kind of souvenir from that particular station if they were programming that way. We got a little bottle of orange blossom perfume from WJAX in Jacksonville, Florida. And the top winners got a carton of oranges. But I think that went to some more distant guy. 5 pounds of pecans from WGPC, Albany, Georgia, World's Greatest Pecan Center. Once I heard a station in Florida advertising a $5 gold piece to the most distant reporter, and that went to a guy, to a ship at sea, a merchant seaman, and they sent you on the very the name of the winner and his the position of his ship at the time he claimed reception. Now you tell me how he would be able to prove where he was at the time of that reception, I don't know. They have to be verified by the captain and so forth. He was winner nevertheless, or so they say. At least I didn't get the $5 gold piece. That much I'm sure of. The other thing, I think I referred to it in one of the last reports I sent to the club bulletin. I know someone reminded me of it. CFCO ran a DX contest and they got a bathtub full of mail. They had a picture of it in Great X magazine. The response in the old days was quite a little bit greater than it is now. You can run a DX program now and you might get 20 letters or 50. I think if we got 50 letters now, we'd think it would marvel success. So the response is entirely different. The other thing that amazes me, and I think it dates back to the time when you fellows started to collect coverage maps. I can remember when the first coverage maps began to appear, and some of you started to collect them. Then you started to collect the top 40 lists, the hits. You know, what do you call them?
Survey sheets.
Now I see you auction off those little knickknacks, advertising gimmicks, a little plastic billboard there. Lord knows what you'll have next. Oh, there was a Playboy magazine auctioned off. Imagine that. Well, anyway, we didn't collect that kind of stuff in the old days.
They didn't publish stuff.
They weren't allowed to.
So the hobby has taken a lot of different directions, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're able to keep going, because you do have these different avenues of interest. One of the avenues that you have is many of you are more interested in the technical end. I know a lot of you are engineers, some of you are DJs, and I know for sure one of you is a member of the CIA. Now, don't ask me how I know, because I'm not going to incriminate myself. But I remember I used to be the publisher of this outfit. And I used to know Stanberry. I was a friend of Stanberry.
You don't hold that again.
All right. You don't fool me, buddy. I've been around a while. So I just refer to the diversity of this club, which I think is what perpetuates it. And that pleases me, because that means that it'll continue to keep on. Now, back to a little reference about those bulletins that I have. There are only a few existing from the York days. And I see that you've raised the question about whether or not the club was organized in 1933 or 1934. Is that correct? There's some question about that? Well, I might be able to check that out. When I get back home, I'll go dig those files out. And that's quite possible that that is, there is an error there. And I see now, if you're planning 50-year celebration, that would be important. And I can almost figure out how it happened if that error does exist. Because I think you're basing your 50 years off of that little folder, that little circular that said in the year 1933, that has the purpose of DXing on. You know that little folder that you send out with a report explaining the hobby? You know what I refer to?
Yeah.
Is that what you're basing the history of the club on?
No.
Other information?
My information indicates that the first formation of the club, the first formal organizational meeting was held in November of 1933.
All right. Well, I could check that, and I will when I get back. I'll have to go through some of the junk in the attic. Heavens knows how long that'll take. I'll make an effort to do that. Now, the other thing that I thought about when you said maybe this figure wasn't going to show up, good Lord. What I remember about the early days. Well, somebody already referred to how poor they were. Hey, they wasn't as poor as me, boy. I was poor, poor. The guy sent me a tape. My son sent me a tape of a Baptist preacher from Shreveport, Louisiana, a month or so ago. And that fellow was preaching to a group of older people, reminding them that they shouldn't give in to their fears, that old age should not hold any fears for them, that they should hold steadfast to the things that they believed in. That their faith should carry them through their old age. When they did have fears, they were denying their faith. And then he recalled having lived through the Depression, which I'm sure you've heard of, and which I experienced. The preacher did too, and I'll repeat what he said. He said, "I picked cotton for 40 cents a hundred. And my brother and I cleared a field for a gallon of syrup. Some people say the Depression is coming back. I sure hope not. It hurt too much." He said, "But if it does, I can take it. But I sure feel sorry for you youngins. I don't want you to have to go through that." And you know that kind of expresses my feelings too. It hurt too much. But even so, with all that behind us, the good parts were that we had a hobby, like DXing, that provided great benefits. We got out of it, because we made something out of nothing, practically. When a magazine like Rate X and people that were dedicated to working with the club and exchanging the information, we really had an interesting hobby there that was a lot of fun in the 30s. I agree with Carlton Lord, that was the high point of it. and it still provides you fellows with an unusual hobby. Most people think you're nuts. I wonder sometimes about it myself. When I started to tune, my father brought home, my father took me to a house where a man had gotten a Crosley, Lou Crosley, with a headphone set and an attachment where you could use another headphone set. And we were allowed to listen on one of the headphones, and we heard KDKA, which was only over the hill from us. And then he tuned the dials, and we heard, Chicago probably. I can't remember what there. But that led to my father getting a set later on. The year was 1925, and I remember the night he brought it home. We couldn't wait till we got it hooked up. What about an antenna? He said, oh, that's all right. We're going to run a wire upstairs and hook them on the bed springs. And that was our first antenna, and it worked. And the first station we tuned in was WSBC Chicago, World Storage Battery Company, it meant. And I don't know what it means now. Don't care either. That's what it meant to me then. And I'll never forget the thrill it was. Then maybe the next one was KYW, which was in Chicago then, KFKI, Hastings, Nebraska. And, all those other old goodies. And I was just a kid, and I often wonder why they tolerated me. I must have been a precocious little brat. The way I presided over that radio, tuning up and down the dial, keeping the other members of the family away from the set. But they indulged me a good bit of the time on that thing. I know the rest would have probably wanted to hear something else, although, I don't know, there was that DX feeling. Everyone had it to some degree or another. They were kind of thrilled that you could get those distant stations. Then it wasn't until the closest I ever came to getting a Berry, without realizing there was such a hobby, was hearing WAZL Hazelden on their first equipment test. And I thought they said WACL, which wasn't listed in my logbook, which was Stevens' logbook or one of the others. Great X not having, not being in print then, I don't think it was, or maybe about the time it started. Wasn't in that log, but I sent him a postcard anyway because it sounded like WACL, Hazelden, Pennsylvania. Got a card back from him, said thank me for the report, and listed their call letters as WAZL, told me the frequency and power they were using. And that really would constitute a verification, but I didn't know what it meant. That long since was discarded. That wasn't until I started reading about verifications in Radex magazine that I started to send out reports in earnest and began collecting them. I guess I have 2,300 plus. At one time, my goal also was to verify all of the United States, and I got whittled down to a 12, I believe. I can't be sure about that because, as Mr. Lord said, you could never be quite sure how many you needed because there was always construction permits issued and you weren't sure of the status of the construction permit, whether the station was on the air or not. But that was a goal. One time I heard all the eastern stations except WNAB, Bridgeport, Connecticut. Then they run a VX program and I sent them a report, no answer. And finally then I persuaded them to answer that report with follow-ups, and by that time though there were other stations on the East Coast that I needed, so I never realized that goal. Then the other thing I wanted to mention was all-nighters. What's the first all-nighter you can remember, Carlton? Yeah. Pete, what do you remember?
WEXL, Royal Oak, Michigan.
50 watts on 1370.
Right.
Mother Coughlin Station, right. Am I correct in remembering that WFIW Hopkinsville in Old Kentucky was one of the first all-nighters? Well, WFIW is no longer on the air. They were on for years there.
They're WAVE now. Louisville.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's what that is, WAVE. Okay. Well, I used to hear the same things you, the rest of you have recorded, except I don't believe anyone mentioned this. The Eastern stations used to sign off, some of them at 11, some of them 12, all of them by 1, which meant that, and the central time zones, I can't think of any that weren't off by midnight central time, which meant that the only thing on after 1 a.m. was Mountain or Pacific time stations. That meant if we started to listen at 1 a.m., we were going to hear, with a few exceptions probably, Mountain or Pacific time zone stations. Particularly, this was true after 2 a.m. Anything you heard after 2 a.m. had to be Mountain or Pacific time zone. And then if you were listening after 3 a.m., you knew that was... And you started one end of the dial and up the other. After 3 a.m., everything was blank. But if you stopped on a carrier, you knew right away you got a carrier there. You knew that all you had to do was stick there a little bit and there'd be an identification. And it usually was a new station testing. The one you referred to, your Whippany, New Jersey, was one of the many calls Whippany, New Jersey used experimentally issued by the Federal Communications Commission upon receipt of request by the manufacturer, who had the permission of the FCC upon specific application to test that transmitter before shipment to the purchaser. And so there were many stations broadcast, there were many such broadcasts from Whippany, New Jersey, as you described, with different call letters. Many of them confirmed, and many of the old DXs had such verifications in their files. You could confirm that, Carlton? Okay, now let me see. Something else you referred to a little while ago. Oh, the Australians we used to hear, and Zetters, you didn't get those until sunrise here in the east. I mean, it was time to get up and go to work. Unless you stayed up all night and then you were sound asleep. 5:30 a.m. I'm talking. Okinawa, during the war years. Did you hear Okinawa?
Never got any more.
KSAI in Saipan. I remember one night, Johannes called me, lived in Buffalo. And if none of you had the privilege of meeting him, I realized, talking about someone not very many on your map. An unusual character. He could speak French, German. He was born in Luxembourg. He was married to an Indian girl. He went to his house and there was just a bare floor. He had a room where he repaired radios that looked like a jungle. He was a poor man, but he could pay his own way. I could write a book about him, I think. Johannes called me on the phone one night to tell me such and such a station was testing. And so I thought, hey, that's pretty good. A little bit later that same night, I hear KSAI Saipan coming in. And I'd already recorded KSAI. And so I thought, I'll call Johannes back, repay the favor. And I recall, I didn't realize at the time that the guy had to answer on a payphone down the hall, three flights down. And after it rang a while, you know, he got on the phone and I told him. Well, then the next time we met, he said, don't ever call me again. What's that? My God, you're waking everybody in the whole damn building. And of course, so you couldn't help that guy. The other thing about him was, when he sent in the DX report to us there in one of those DX programs, WCPA, he sent in a Spanish report form. I have it in my file. He was one of those characters that it was a pleasure. He's part of the spice of life.
Part of it upside down?
I beg your pardon?
Part of it upside down?
Yes, part of it upside down. Usually he'd send little clippings along. Lord knows what he's going to get from her. He'd send you a calendar at Christmas time that he'd gotten from the bank somewhere in Buffalo. Things like that.
Could you go back to 1933 and tell us what you recall from Love, York?
What I remember about the people at York.
Yeah, Thomas.
Okay. Bob Weaver was the guy that started the club. And I was kind of thinking about him when Carlton was referring to the start of some of those radio clubs. And I suspect maybe that's the kind of guy he was. He had access to a mimeograph machine and a few reams of paper from his father's office and some stencils and the idea that he could run his own club better than he could get along with some other group. And probably that was the way it got started. Then he had some fellows around that area, Art Brackville, who was a very excellent man in Lancaster, Warren Rodson, who was a good member of our club for many years. I know many of the older fellows. I know you don't know him. You meet him, Pete?
Yes, I do.
You knew Warren. Yeah. Warren Rodson was a good man. He's one of the original members. Who were some of the others? Kermit Geary, he's still a member of the club.
Frank Wheeler,
his membership goes back, I guess, about that far. I can't recall him being active until in the 30s, but I'm pretty sure his membership goes back to the 30s. There was another Erie man that I was confusing him with, and that was Freddie Merritt. But Frank Wheeler.
Gordon.
Yeah, well, those guys, that was the Erie group. In the York group, it all revolved around Weaver. Now, whether Weaver is living or dead, I have not been able to determine. Tried to find out from that area and run against stone walls so far. But all of a sudden, we went, I think in that issue where we printed those pictures, was there one in there from that York convention? Was there one of those little pictures, a little group at the York convention?
The nostalgia issue?
Yeah, that nostalgia issue.
I think so.
That was a 39 picture in Erie, but I don't remember whether there was one from York, PA. Wasn't that one of the pictures I sent you? Yeah, I don't know whether it was published or not. Well, that picture was taken by Warren Rodson, and Bob Weaver's picture was in there. Kermit Geary's was in there also. I'm pretty sure they were in that. Almost positive. Well, that was the original York group. And when we had that meeting, made plans for the following fall. The CPC stationery was printed. I think I still have a few sheets up from there. And then the next thing we heard, hey, Weaver decided he can't go through with the club anymore. The club is no more. And the next thing we hear from Harry Gordon, he's negotiating to try to take over what's left of the radio club. And I was somewhat shocked to find how few members there were. And Gordon struggled for a long time to try to coax people to join the club. That time it was an all-wave club, as many short-wave members as we did broadcast anything. And it almost died out there, but he finally got it going. And then, for some reason, we just had a nucleus of active members that seemed to all have a good exchange of information that kept it alive. And when Pop H took it over, it started to become a different club. And then we recruited Ernie along the line. And you can always build something when you got one guy that sticks at it. And I don't think anybody stuck at it any longer than him. So if you're handing out medals, make sure he gets one. Or a star from the middle of your forehead, Ernie. Cousin.
That might be a target.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Yes.
Echo.
Now, back me up on this, fellas. I don't remember exactly much about Echo, except that it was a stamp company that tried originally to sell the stations the idea of the stamps, and the purpose was that you had to send a dime in when you were asking for a verification. They charged 10 cents for a stamp, or you could send your verifications from the station in, and they would make you Echo stamps, or they'd supply Echo stamps, 10 cents a piece for as many as you wanted to order, but you had to supply them your verification as proof. Correct?
Right. So far? They were published by the American Bank Company.
Okay. Now, it had its demise of relatively recent times. Hank Kendall was the last guy to use it, to my knowledge. He had a verification, if he had an Echo stamp for every verification he had, which was, well, I mean, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. Many thousands.
Way up there anyway.
Many thousands. What he would do would be, pardon?
6,925.
6,925, yeah. I know it was very high. What he would do, he finally arranged with the people who took over the stamps to purchase what was left, and then he would send his verifications into them, tell them what color he wanted, and they would print the call letters on the stamps that he wanted, and specify the color, send it back. But the original idea was to send, you know, they promote it to the station, they'd sell the verifications, or those Echo stamps to the stations, then they'd charge the X-Fan 10 cents. But many stations gave them away. In fact, I never paid for them. And then some stations prepared their own stamps. KFI stamp is not an Echo stamp, that's a station stamp. And then that led to such things as KFBL, Dublin, Texas. Is that the color of Dublin, Texas? They used to advertise, all send us 13 cents for this beautiful four-color certificate of verification. That's just an ordinary little cheap printing job like some guy in Catani would. They charge you 13 cents for it. Well, anyway, Echo, that became another hobby almost. And I saw guys with sheets of Echo stamps. Eric Gordon had gathered up all the stamps that were left over by WERE when they changed call letters to WLEU. And he was passing them out as souvenirs, door prizes, and so forth. So they never had any real significance. I mean, it got to the point where they were not significant. Anyone else? Yeah?
What were you
guessing
like during World War II?
During World War II? Okay. Well, we ought to mention some of those stations. WXLQ, the 50 water in Bermuda, Armed Forces Radio Station, one in the Panama Canal Zone.
Mm-hmm. ACA.
ACA on 790.
We were talking about a little while ago, Greenland.
I want to brag a little there. All I had to have assistance. I went over to, there's an Armed Forces Radio Station in Greenland. Gee, I can't pronounce the name of that city. Well, these people were using the call letters WXLS, correct. And I went over to WISR in Butler. A member of the club, Dave Snyder, was chief engineer over there, and he invited me over. They had a helicopter receiver there at the transmitter, and we hooked the transmitter antenna, the station antenna, on as receiving antenna. And we were able to log that station on that DX. It was pretty hard copy. Dave had spent quite a few years as a radio man in the Merchant Marine, you know, and he was used to digging it out of the mud. And he tuned it in there, and he said, "There she is, Coop." And I sit with the phones on for a while and got enough out of it that they confirmed it. Then after I got my answer back, he said to me, "Did you have nerve enough to send that?" "These guys are reporting." So, you know, I didn't have much, but I heard it nevertheless. But I got to tell you, those were the exact conditions. Now, the programming otherwise, and oh, you give me a good lead in here, something I wanted to pass on, was a little different. You know, the guys are in the services, and they have no tires for their cars. They can't get any cars because they quit making automobiles. Everything's for the military. The programming is a little more somber. The news itself has the casualty list first in the morning. There's a lot of tears shed, you know, when you think about what's going on in the world. I don't know whether that's what you wanted me to say or not, but that's what I have to say. Okay. Really? No, I didn't notice that. Once again, I'm not the right person to ask that question because I never spend a lot of time tuning for foreign stations. Locally, I can tell you about it. They signed off a little earlier, and verifications, for example, came through on wartime paper. Remember, I got one very there. It's written on a short note. It says, "We're conserving paper." In support of the war effort. The government had restrictions on the manufacture of paper here. And it didn't really make a great deal of difference in the conditions that I know of, except there were those unique stations that popped up and were there for a brief time and then disappeared. Foreign-wise, no. Slogan I remember on the shortwave stations, the hams were shut down. You weren't allowed to transmit any amateur operations. Early in the war, the hams, the Japanese hams were called letters were prefixed J-O, you know. They had a slogan out, "Let's K-O the J-O's." I remember that was one of the war slogans. And the programming was a little different. Keeping with the mood of the country. WBT Charlotte. Maybe you can remember the guy's name. The Nightmare. The WBT used to carry a signal up and down the East Coast. Now, maybe they still do. I don't know. But that guy on there achieved a very high rating nationally, that disc jockey, and I can't remember his name. He was opposed by network DJs, Martin Block being one of them. And he was only on for that one station from midnight to 1 a.m. Hour and a half he was on. He was on from 11:30 to 1 a.m. The first hour, he would play requests, and the last hour he would segue the tunes that he played during the request period. And you'd call in and ask them to play Bubbles in the Wine. And he'd say, "What's that you want? Bubbles in the Wine." He already had queued up, you know, and was starting to play it in the background. And then he'd say, "Well, we'll see what we can do." By that time, he had brought the level up, and he was playing the music for you. He had a very entertaining program. And would be a format worth copying today. I think if I was a producer, I could help some ambitious young guy develop a program that would be of interest to for a top, you know, a 40s audience, 40s or 50s audience, based on this guy's ideas. And then during the last half hour, he would just simply segue the tunes that he'd played and sign off at 1 o'clock. And he had little tidbits he'd intersperse. He'd say, here's a safe driving tip. Keep both hands on the wheel, a light foot on the accelerator, and dim your lights, cause everyone else does. And the music comes up and away you go for another record. It was a marvelous program. That's one of the things that disappeared after the war. I don't know what happened to the guy. I never heard from him. I often thought to write WBT to find out where. I suppose he died, though, some of the rest of us. Anybody else? Hey, make you feel happy. Thank you. Oh, let me wind up with this real thing. This is my exit. I always plan my ending before I plan the beginning. Every invention has introduced new words into the vocabulary and new catchphrases, you know. When the automobile was invented, there was windshield, headlight, what else? Some of the things that the automobile brought into the vocabulary. And catchphrases like, get a horse. Remember how the hicks in the country used to stand on the sidelines when your car broke down and say, get a horse? Well, you don't remember. Well, I do. Radio had the same thing, you know. There was all meters and audio. I got to be careful when I get TV words in there. You know what they are. Kilocycles. That's what it still should be. Damn the college guy that changed that to kilohertz. Some smart aleck from MIT, I suppose. You had a good word there, and it's self-explanatory. For guys like me, I can understand it. I know who Hertz was. He didn't deserve any honor any more than any of the rest of us. Kilocycles, I still say. If you hear me on with the DX program, you'll say, operating on 1380 kilocycles. Damn you. Well, anyway, there was a phrase crept into the language, and you've heard it in your household, probably. Being a DX man, I'm sure you have. I heard it in mine many a time. That phrase was, turn that damn thing off!